Hello and welcome to another edition of Radio Free Nintendo. This is your sometimes host, Evan Birchfield. I'm coming at you right now with three of our podcast favorites. I've got Stan Ferguson with us.
Buenos ding dong dindelidios.
Carl Castaneda.
What's up, guys?
And Jonathan Metz, site director of PlanetGameCube.com.
Hi!
And we're going to be talking about, of course, as per usual, everything involving Nintendo and how it affects you. So, the first thing we want to start off with is the most important thing about Nintendo right now, Wii. Pre-orders are going on right now, or at least they were, at EB Games and GameStop and other various outlets. And apparently, Wii has already been pre-ordered out. Now, some of us are sitting here thinking, should we have pre-ordered? So I want to get all your guys' thoughts, and whoever has an opinion, just throw it out there.
No!
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 So, pretty resounding
no. What a waste of time!
Yeah.
So, what's the reason for that, guys?
Because you can walk into a Walmart, pick one up, and leave.
Now, here's the best part. You can probably walk into a GameStop and pick one up. Even if you have ethical problems with Walmart, don't worry. You know, you're not going to have trouble. Look, there are 1 million units on launch day in North America. That's twice as many as they had for GameCube. And you could walk into places on GameCube launch day and pick up one.
Oh, now, we've got a couple of forum readers, VG Revolution and Smash Bro, who are going on and on about how this is going to be, and this is their point, it's going to be a big launch. This is the Wii is on two top toys of Christmas list, and it's there's articles written for mainline magazines and websites about it. So could this be a giant launch that actually does this go the Tickle Me Elmo route, where people get held up at gunpoint for it?
I'll answer that question, if I may.
Go ahead.
No. And here's why. Here's why. Because no matter what you get at the birth of a system, with a system launch, especially with something like Wii, which yeah, it's cheaper, but it's not cheap. It's still $250, and at that rate, you're still gonna have the quote unquote early adopter phase, and because of that, you're not gonna have, you know, Joe Schmo who has nothing to do with games suddenly realizing, hey, I want a Wii. I'm gonna go get one on launch day. You're not gonna have 1,000 of these people going to Toys R Us and Walmart, all these places. You're going to have spillover. There's going to be enough for everybody.
Right, and let's also hammer down the point that it's 1 million on launch day, with many more that will be added later on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Those shipments are going to be refreshed very quickly. And look, here's why Wii is not going to be the Tickle Me Elmo of this Christmas, because Tickle Me Elmo is the Tickle Me Elmo of this Christmas.
Yeah.
The 10th anniversary of Tickle Me Elmo.
Have you seen the TF? It's really kind of creepy. Like, it does all these somersaults, and it's like jumping around and flipping. And and here's the disturbing thing. I saw a video for this. All right, you touch him. Like, apparently Elmo is the most ticklish being on the face of the earth, because you touch him on the belly and he laughs and rolls around for 5 minutes after that.
Oh, that's not going to get annoying.
I think the guy has, like, somatic problems. You know? Like, he has serious physical infirmities. I mean, how could you function in society?
Well, he hasn't ever aged. Ever.
Well, he lives in Sesame Street. I mean, yeah,
it's physically handicapped Elmo is what it is.
Well, in a strange way. But look, here's the other deal. Nintendo does not want to create a Wii sellout. Sony may. I think Sony probably would make more systems if they could, but they're certainly not complaining about the ridiculous hype that PS3 is going to get, because they think it benefits them. And Nintendo is saying, look, if these guys aren't going to have enough units, then we are. Nintendo does not want to sell out the system. They want to sell through. They want to sell as many systems as possible. They're making tons and tons and tons of them. They're going to make even more if they can ramp up production. And there's no reason why they shouldn't be able to, because the system is not a technological masterpiece like the PS3. It's not pushing new technology. They're not going to have any problems with, you know, bottlenecking components. It's not going to happen. So there will be so many Wiis this holiday season. And even on the very bizarre chance that you're not able to pick one up on launch day, they're going to have new shipments coming in 3 or 4 days later.
Yep.
Do you think that that's going to bite them in the butt, though? They're going to have so many available, it could become we become inundated with Wii.
No.
No.
There's going to be a certain amount per store. That, you know,
what I'm saying is that are they overestimating the demand? That's my real question. Do you think that there's going to be the point where it kind of it's there's so many of them left that it kind of becomes a joke?
No, I think they learned that they learned that lesson with the GameCube, where they actually had to halt production because they had so many left over. I think they definitely learned their lesson with that, and they're going to kind of go by what the demand is. If GameStops are asking for more, they'll give them more. If they're not, they'll hold them in the warehouse, and they'll halt production. They'll halt production for a little while. That just seems like the most logical choice as far as I'm concerned.
And let's get this clear. When they halted production of GameCube, that's not a production problem. That's good. That means we outpaced ourselves. We made more than we needed to make. That's great. The only problem there is it just says that the system is not selling as much as it could sell. And that's a problem, but it has nothing to do with production. The only production problem you can have is not making enough. Making too many is not a problem, because Nintendo's not going to make more systems than they will ever sell. They might make more than they can sell before New Year's. And if so, they will be left with the terrible, terrible fate of having systems sit on the shelf for a week or two before somebody comes by and picks them up with Christmas money.
Basically, yeah.
Speaking of production problems, I want to move on to a different topic, which is Clover Studios, a subsidiary of Capcom, a development studio within Capcom, has closed its doors, and is half of the people involved with Clover have been dissolved into the rest of Capcom, and the two lead designers of Clover, minus one actually, of the three, two of them have left Capcom altogether and are moving on to their own projects. So Clover is responsible for the Beautiful Joe games, God Hand, Okami, among others. They've been a very influential developer, and I want to start with Carl, because you're a big fan of Beautiful Joe. I want to know how this affects you.
Well, anyone who posts in the forums knows that I'm a huge fan just by looking at my username. And Beautiful Joe is actually the reason that I became a game reviewer, so obviously I hold a very big soft spot for it in my heart. And losing Clover, for me, is just... It's like seeing one of your favorite teams that you saw kind of grow into prosperity, maybe not in the sales sense, but in the critical sense, and now it's gone. You know, you could always count on that team to have a cool game that you would go out and buy. It would be similar if, you know, Grasshopper Manufacturer were to shut down, because now I'm such a huge fan of them because of Killer 7. It would be a similar thing.
Do you think a game like Beautiful Joe can't get made again at Capcom?
I think they can certainly replicate the formula. I mean, that's what basically what they did for Beautiful Joe 2. But as far as adding in the subtle nuances that made Beautiful Joe more special than the average brawler, I think that's pretty much lost.
Hey, Carl, I have a question. Beautiful Joe, the original, was made before Clover Studios was formed. Do you know if it was made by essentially the same people, though?
Yes, Team Beautiful was responsible for the first one and the second one, so it was essentially the same people.
So basically, the people who made Beautiful Joe became Clover Studios.
At least Team Beautiful was, yeah.
Okay.
All right. So my question, this is for everybody then, is that what made Clover Studios so special? What is it about these games that sets them apart from other
games? They took
their
games seriously. They took their games very seriously.
But that's a philosophy. What about the games? What specifically about the games is different?
Their art design. They were able to do incredible things with the... cell shading to create totally unique.
Yeah, but there are exceptions to that. There, if you look at God Hand, it doesn't follow the same art style as you see in Beautiful Joe and Okami.
Yeah, but
and even
I'm
even
sure
within
God Hand blows.
we'll forgive Itsushi Inaba for God Hand and Red Hot Rumble, but that's beside the point.
So what I'm hearing, I don't know if art design, if I buy that. Do we really think that the design of the game has, or the art style is really a major selling point and has made these guys such critical darlings?
No, absolutely not, because even within cell shading, there is a distinctive style difference between Okami and Beautiful Joe.
Right. And it's not just cell shading. I mean, they put a lot of work into it, and it's just an incredible, and it's beautiful.
Absolutely. If you look at a screenshot of Okami, it does not look like a PS2 game. It is ridiculously good looking.
Now, for sure. So, Johnny, you've been playing Okami quite a bit lately. What are your thoughts on that game?
Yeah, I just beat it last night. I it took me over 50 hours. Right at 50 hours to beat it. And I think Okami is one of the best games I've ever played. And I think, I haven't played all of Clover's games, so I really can't speak about them as a developer, but that these guys made Okami makes me, like, amazed at their ability. The only bad thing you can really say about Okami is that it's not, in terms of its gameplay, not very original, because it copies from Zelda, like, wholesale. But, you know, there are worse game designs you could copy, and it copies it very well and adds a lot of, not necessarily new elements, but it twists things in a different way. Like, if you kind of think about the difference between Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask, where it took basically the same gameplay, but it did different things with it, it made it feel really different. Okami basically does that, except it draws from virtually the entire Zelda series.
Well, if you think about it, that was the strength of Clover. They are very Japanese in the sense that they take an existing concept and they basically throw their own flavor on it. Beautiful Joe, if you get right down to it, is basically very similar to its, you know, earlier brother brawler brethren. It just
but
it
ta- when, they ta- from what I've played of Beautiful Joe, I personally think that game is gameplay wise different than it is far removed from Brawlers as opposed to Okami's similarities to Zelda. I think
how do you feel it's removed from Brawlers?
Because of the time elements, because of the variety of moves and the very interesting 2D gameplay that is somewhat innovative in how it works. Overall, I think Beautiful Joe.
Those were always an integral part of Brawlers though.
What, slowing down time?
Not slowing down time, not interacting like in a puzzle way with the
environments. But that's adding gimmicks, and I say that in a good way, to the existing Brawler formula.
To me, that seems to me to be a game design specific advantage of that game, whereas Okami is a game that.
So you're saying that time manipulation made Beautiful Joe then?
Yes, absolutely. Without it, what was it?
Wait, hold that thought then, because then would you say that Beautiful Joe is very similar to Prince of Persia?
No, actually, because Prince of Persia's combat, although it was emphasized in Prince of Persia, was not actually a facet of the game.
Yeah, but Prince
of
Persia's
big hook.
The
best part about that game were the time elements involved with the...
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. Because if you're saying that manipulating time in Beautiful Joe was such a big factor, then of course it could be compared to
Prince of
Persia.
It was a big factor in Beautiful Joe because it's a different game. And Prince of Persia, it didn't apply to the... It was overused in combat, but it wasn't actually a part of the combat to me. Combat was not the great part about Prince of Persia. What I'm saying is that Beautiful Joe made combat good and exciting through its time. It was to me, that is a gameplay specific advantage.
I don't know, because you could say the same thing about Okami. I mean, I haven't played it, but I know a little bit about it. There are certain aspects of the game that aren't exactly like Zelda, such as the drawing circles and lines in order to defeat your enemies. It's little gameplay specific additions that make it just slightly different. Just like adding in the time element makes Beautiful Joe just slightly different, but adds so much more to the actual experience. I mean, Beautiful Joe, at its heart, is a brawler, a 2D brawler.
Stan, what you may not realize about Okami is that the drawing stuff, although it's very cool and I like it, almost all of the drawing powers are basically like a slightly different implementation of powers that you get in Zelda. Right. Like, you use drawing to do bombs, you use it to do fancy spinning slash attacks, you use it to, instead of like flaming arrows, you can draw flame from one place to another. Same for lightning and ice, and you can use it to like get across water. So I mean, it's really not that much. It's like it kind of replaces the Ocarina or the Wind Waker type item, and it's more versatile than that. But it kind of is just a nice catch-all way to combine lots of different powers that you get across numerous Zelda games. What I would say is special about Okami, and maybe indicated the kind of games that Clover wanted to make if they had enough time, because it spent a lot of time in development. The story is really amazing. It's like it's kind of a spin on apparently a classic Japanese myth.
The sun god Amaterasu.
Yeah, and it goes in some really interesting, unpredictable directions. For a long time, it seems kind of predictable, but then you get at some point, and it kind of spins on its head, and it goes into some really cool stuff that you didn't expect. The other thing about it is I think just the world that they create is really amazing, and the only thing I can compare it to is Wind Waker, because they take this odd art style, and they kind of build the nature of the world and the nature of the game around the way the game looks. Because, in other words, the art design reflects the kind of game that it is, the attitude of the game, the mood that it's evoking. It's such a complete aesthetically complete look to the game and sound and everything. It's really just a beautiful piece of art, the way everything fits together. And you don't find many games that work in a holistic way like that. It's amazing. And one reason I wanted to get on tonight was so I could talk about Okami, because I think this is – when I first put it in, and I played it for like 3 hours, and when I got online, I think I was talking to Dan Bloodworth, and I said, it's like somebody put a Nintendo game on PS2. It feels like that. It has that polish. It has that ease of play. It has that style to it. It has that satisfaction when you play that just makes you feel good, and it makes you want to keep playing it more and more and more. And it doesn't feel like a third-party game at all. It totally feels like a beautiful, grand, epic, first-party Nintendo game.
And is there swan song?
It as it turns out, yeah. And it's a game that I feel like every Nintendo fan needs to play this game. Because it's not like I'm telling you to go out and play God of War or Tekken or something weird like that I wouldn't necessarily recommend to people who typically play mainly Nintendo first-party games. If you're the kind of person who goes out and buys like virtually every first-party game from Nintendo and you worship the ground Miyamoto walks on, you will love Okami. You will love it. It's right up your alley. That's exactly what it is. And it's long, it's fantastic, it's beautiful. You should play it.
Well, thank you very much for the... How much are they paying you, really? No.
They need the help, man, because Okami sold like crap.
What?
They need the help because Okami sold like crap.
Well, it did in Japan. I don't know how it's doing in America. Probably not great. I'm trying to help it out a little here, but trust me, I paid for this game out of my own pocket, and it's absolutely worth it. Oh, man. Yeah. It's fantastic.
Well, we're going to move on right after this quick commercial break.
Yar, this be Sweet Pete, the pirate of the jungle, and I'm here to talk to you about my favorite food, man cakes. We love man cakes, man cakes, man cakes. We love man cakes, why don't you? Man cakes, man cakes. We love man cakes, man cakes. We love you. Yar, that's right. I love me some man cakes. In the morning, in the evening, in the afternoon, sometimes at night when I wake up. There's nothing more that I want than a man cake.
Man cake's not a viable source of nutrition.
And we're back from our commercial break. And I'm going to start us out on a new topic, which is Stephen Kent had recently wrote on his blog an article about a comparison between Sega and Nintendo. He did a lot of qualifying in the first few paragraphs, and he went on to say that while Nintendo has made some of the best games ever, Sega overall has a higher quality, a larger base, a library of quality games. And his main argument, I felt like, was coming from the Dreamcast, and I wanted to get your guys' perspective on that. And I want to start with you, Stan. How do you feel about that, particularly as a multi-console gamer?
I've never been much of a Sega fan. I can't say what it is. I mean, I even owned a Dreamcast, went out, bought it the day it came out because it was the day after my birthday. And I bought Sonic Adventure, and that was pretty much it. I rented the NFL 2Ks, a couple NBA games, and I decided it bored me. I didn't care about Sega bass fishing. Wasn't really looking forward to a sequel for Knights. There was just nothing in there that really interested me at all. I can't speak well for Sega because I never really enjoyed them. They always feel like there's something missing. Like, it's just not 100% polished. Like, it could be great, but it felt like a third-party system.
I think that's what Ken's point is that he's saying that while Nintendo has the highest quality games, they don't have the library. And when you look at his list of games, particularly because it's the majority of them are either on the Saturn or on the Dreamcast, they didn't do sequels, whereas Nintendo is pretty much doing sequels all the time. They have done one Panzer Dragoon. They did all kinds of extra sports games. They invented sports games of a certain type. They had the Sonic Adventure, and then they did Knights.
Panzer Dragoons.
They eventually released a sequel, but that was for the Xbox.
No, there was also a Panzer Dragoon Saga game. It was a RPG.
Oh, yep. Okay, yeah. Yeah, so it doesn't feel as though, when you count things like Rez, Seaman, Shenmue, Jet Grind Radio, all these things together on Sega systems, you can certainly say, yeah, there's some exciting stuff here. I was a Dreamcast fan through and through. Absolutely.
I remember having Shenmue, and I just got bored of it within the first 20 minutes, and I'm an RPG fan. I just couldn't stand it.
Well, I think that when we talk about the specific quality of the games, we can say that in some ways Sega was able to really invent a lot of new things. Carl, do you have a perspective on that at all?
There are two moments in my gaming, I guess, career, you could call it, that I'll never forget, and both of them were Sega. The first one was seeing Sonic the Hedgehog the first time, which was one of the first games that I ever saw. My brother got it for his birthday one year, and I was just like enthralled with it. And then the second one was when I was about 10, and it was a friend of mine's birthday, and he had gotten a Dreamcast from Blockbuster, and we were playing Sonic Adventure, and we're just blown away by how good it looked. And we played it, I think we played it for like 10 hours.
Yeah, Sonic Adventure did look good.
These are things that I'll probably never forget.
Yeah.
So for absolutely. That I have a lot of respect for Sega.
And they with the Dreamcast, it was an innovative system. It had a lot of
absolutely.
Really
oh, yeah.
great games.
The VMU, I mean, come on, that says it all right there.
Online yeah. right out of the box.
Yeah, absolutely. Sega Online, absolutely.
But then they made some of the worst business decisions that they could possibly make, and they drove their own system into the ground after it had such a large user base and a high level of support from third parties. I don't know how it happened.
But that's actually not very true, because if you think about it, one of the things that killed them wasn't actually Sega's fault. It was the fact that EA didn't put a Madden on Dreamcast. Yeah.
They didn't put anything on Dreamcast.
Own... Yeah.
EA didn't support Dreamcast at all.
At all. Which is odd, because in the time when Nintendo was pressuring third parties to put games only on SNES or not at all, what's it called? Electronic Arts was one of the few publishers who were able to publish on both. So it's actually very strange they would abandon Sega in that time.
Perhaps they saw the sinking ship, but maybe they caused it. Johnny, do you have any perspective on that?
Not really, because I never owned a Dreamcast and I don't really like Sega games.
Well, I'm not the only one, thank God.
That's too bad. I had a Master System for a while. I had a Genesis for a while. I actually still have a Genesis, I should say. I have always been a bit of a Sega fan. I have to say I can see where he's coming from as far as the multitude. There's these games that kind of are gems that just kind of peek out and really do impress, but maybe there's not much else to say about that. So I want to go on to our next topic, which is back to Nintendo related. Elite Beat Agents playlist of songs was released on the internet by Chris Kohler, and what? It's 19 songs, and it's pretty insane. What do you guys think about that?
I really don't care. I think they work well with the game. As bad as some of them are, like Skater Boy.
What do you think, Carl?
Well, you know, I think I expressed this to you guys before the podcast was recording, and I'm obviously not a big fan of the songs, but you guys have been telling me, you know, that it's the style of the song that's going to make the game, that if the game's going to be funny, it has to have kind of a ridiculous song list, and as long as it's upbeat and happy, it'll work, so I'm just going to take your word for it, but, man, seeing Ashley Simpson there on that song list, I just think that they could have done better.
Considering that the game takes such a large portion of its time to make fun of itself and other situations, and that it's so completely absurd, I feel like music of that nature, pop stuff that kind of sucks, might work. The fact that they've got Cher and David Bowie and Village People, it's like, yeah, I can almost
wait. Are you hating on Bowie?
No, I think he's naming the ones that he liked.
No, What I'm naming is the ones that are quirky, that are kind of... I wouldn't want to hate on Bowie because I love Bowie, but he's weird. And that's what they're doing. I think they're going for the stuff that is going to match the flavor of the
game. But then what about Queen and the Stones?
Dude, Queen, I Was Born to Love You is one of the peppiest, happiest songs Queen has ever done. It is a very happy, fast-paced song.
Yeah. And Johnny, do you have any perspective as an Oenden player?
Well, I just saw the list for the first time. I'm looking at it right now. I mean, it looks like there's a few good songs and a few really terrible songs and then a lot of in-between stuff, which is about what I would expect, really. If you... You know, I don't know much about J-pop, but supposedly the songs that were on Oendon were pretty, you know, like very very mainstream silly stuff, like Avril Lavigne or whatever. So not a far cry from that. To me, Oendon is not great because of the music. I like some of the music, but I'm not one of these guys who rides around in his car listening to game soundtracks and anime music and stuff like that, J-pop.
Are you referencing someone that we know at all, Joey?
I know a lot of people like that. To me, J-pop is just as trashy and unbearable as American pop or Russian pop or Euro pop or any of that. It's an annoying and bad. And I'm totally a music snob, so I'm not going to be terribly happy with any song list of any game ever. Even, you know, Guitar Hero, Guitar Hero 2, I like about half the stuff that's on there.
But they got Spinal Tap on Guitar Hero 2. I might actually buy it.
If they had Spinal Tap on Elite Beat Agents, I would be pretty ecstatic. But
Sex Farm would win it.
I prefer Break Like the Wind, man.
Oh, man.
But the only one I take issue with...
Torpedoes and Flesh Tuxedos. What can you say?
The only one I take issue with in the entire list is You're the Inspiration by Chicago, which is a very slow song.
They're going to use it great. You know they're going to use it.
Oh, it's
going to
be so
great.
I hope the story is about a lost librarian trying to find his books or something really boring. It'll be great. It'll be great if they do something cheesy. But
Wyndon had slow songs.
Oh, did it?
Fine. Yeah, they can still be really hard. And in fact, they might be harder because they put a lot of buttons in between the beats, so it's harder to kind of follow it, you know. Mm-hmm. The other thing I would say is this list has a lot of songs on it, and that makes me pretty happy. It's going to be a longer game than Oendon.
Yeah, that is something. And Chris Kohler talked to what is his name? The guy who made the game,
Keiichi Yano of Imus.
Talked to him about it. And had some very interesting comments from him, so I recommend you all go to Chris Kohler's blog, which
he said this is the kind of music that you would listen to at a frat party, which I just find hilarious.
Yeah, ABC.
ABC.
The other thing to keep in mind is that Oendon had original music for the multiplayer modes, and Elite Beat Agents is supposed to have more... beefier, more extensive multiplayer modes than even Oendon had. So we may be looking at there actually quite a bit of music beyond what's on this list that's original.
Now,
stuff.
Is that Yano doing stuff, or is he contracting other people to do it for him?
I think probably they do some of it in-house, because, you know, they do Guitar Hero, and I mean, not Guitar Hero, but Guitar
Rhythm
Man.
Heaven.
They do Heaven, but they do Guitar
that's
Man,
WarioWare, guys.
A lot of that music is original, I think.
All right, well, that's about all, I think, for Elite Beat Agents, and that's about all for Radio Free Nintendo. I want to just once again mention the Naruto contest, not because I want you to enter, because it's over, but I want to let you know that we will be playing the winners next week, so please be sure to tune in, and it'll be a special podcast on marketing, so join us then, and we will see you later. Thank you very much, guys, for joining us.
I hope some of those entries are as good as mine.
Yeah. One last thing, guys. If you are listening to this on iTunes, sign into the music store, look us up in the podcast section, and please write a one-sentence review for the podcast. It'll help us out a lot.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. I'm going to
record
all of these. Bye.
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 It was absolutely great to have you guys here at Radio Free Nintendo.
Bye. Well, I had a great time being here. Thanks for having me.
It was just the best. Just the best. Always love this it. Is,
let's go out for a round of beers and hookers. I'm buying.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Let's meet in Missouri. I think it's the most centrally located state for all of us.
Bill Brasky is the son of a bitch, I'll tell you what.
And we're done.
Man cakes? Man cakes?